Cable News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Activists against the Trans-Pacific Partnership plan a major event this Saturday at Director Park in downtown Portland. To drive home the significance of the proposed trade deal, Cable's Lisa Loving spoke with Michael Shannon of the Fair Trade Campaign for details about what is at risk if the TPP passes into law.
Now, talk about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. A relative of mine over the weekend was saying, well, Lisa, you don't agree with it, but I think it's a really good idea because dot, dot, dot. Now, you tell us, what's going on there? For people that have heard of TPP, but they think it's something they get in the paper aisle of the grocery store.
Well, the first thing is the Trans-Pacific Partnership is the largest free trade agreement ever negotiated. So it's larger than the past free trade agreements like the North American Free Trade Agreement or the Central American Free Trade Agreement. And it's not only larger, it's more of the same bad policy and then some. These free trade deals are really about removing regulations so that not just goods and services, but also capital can move across borders with less boundaries. And when we look at what do we want, do we want goods and services and profit moving more easily, or do we want workers taken care of and our environment protected? And those are not necessarily at odds if everyone was at the table when negotiating the Trans-Pacific Partnership. But who wasn't at the table were labor unions, frontline workers, climate activists, human rights advocates, and public health experts. So we got a deal negotiated by corporate interests that serves corporate interests.
Okay, just to briefly go back, you had said this is the largest partnership or trade deal of its kind. How do we judge that? What is larger about it than, say, for example, some of the ones that the Clinton administration negotiated?
Well, that's really easy because there's two big ways in which it's larger. Using the North American Free Trade Agreement as an example, that was an agreement that covered three countries: Canada, United States, Mexico. The Trans-Pacific Partnership has 12 countries, and for the first time ever, this free trade agreement has the ability for countries to join on in the future. So when NAFTA was negotiated, it was a pact. Three countries, no one else could join in. But the Trans-Pacific Partnership actually has a mechanism for countries to join in the future. So it's the number of countries that makes it larger, but also the amount of the economy covered. When you look at the, and I don't have the number for the North American economy compared to the global economy, but the Trans-Pacific Partnership will set rules for 40% of the world's economy. 40% of the world's economy in 12 countries. And the only way to change this deal is to get all 12 signatory nations on board with any changes. So it's big. It has bad pro-corporate policy because it was negotiated in secret by corporate interests. And if it is ratified, it will be nearly impossible to make it better.
Can you give us a short list of some of the specific policies in it that are problematic for workers?
Yes, definitely. So I'm going to actually start with one of the arguments you'll hear from the pro-Trans-Pacific Partnership side, in the sense of the Trans-Pacific Partnership has a minimum wage requirement, which has never existed before in a free trade deal. That sounds great. And as a talking point, it's true and it is good. The problem is that that is the requirement in the Trans-Pacific Partnership. There's no number. There's no formula. So a country could set its minimum wage at a penny a day and would be fulfilling the Trans-Pacific Partnership's labor and wage protection requirements. Other opportunities that were missed were bringing in internationally agreed labor standards, policies that into the Trans-Pacific Partnership they were not. Moving to the environment, some international treaties like the protection of marine mammals or the regulation of shipping lines could have been folded into the Trans-Pacific Partnership. They were not. And then one of the big ones for me personally is the access to medication issue. The Trans-Pacific Partnership will export the United States' broken pro-corporate patent system across the Pacific Rim, keeping generic affordable medications off the market longer, keeping name brand expensive drugs generating profit for big pharma longer. One very dangerous statistic I heard from AMFAR, a research organization looking at HIV and AIDS issues, is that if the TPP is ratified and Vietnam is included, over half of Vietnamese citizens living with HIV will lose access to affordable medication.
I want to sidetrack briefly and say, now, I think the TPP negotiations and the United States' ratification of it is something that I feel like Barack Obama has dragged this out and said he's going to do it. But we haven't really technically ratified them, have we?
No. And that's a very important point, and I really thank you for bringing that up. The Trans-Pacific Partnership has been was in negotiations for over a decade. It started under George W. Bush and was inherited by the Obama administration. And then in February of this year, it was signed. And there was a lot of messaging trying to make that signed come across as finished, done. It wasn't. It was a ceremonial signing, but it was a step that had to be done before it goes to all of the parliamentary bodies of all of the signature countries for ratification. Because of a complex formula within the TPP, if the larger economies don't ratify, the deal is dead. So I want to be very blunt. The road to ratification, or the road to defeating the Trans-Pacific Partnership, runs through the U.S. House of Representatives. And that vote has not occurred.
Sketch this out a little bit, though. When it comes to the United States and our electoral policies, elected officials, lawmakers, candidates for office, HRC versus Donald Trump, I'm really confused about the landscape on this because I have heard that Trump is against it. I'm not sure what that necessarily means in terms of the bigger picture of what Donald Trump represents, though. And then I feel as if Hillary Clinton was for it before she was against it. Can you talk a little bit about the party politics as they impact the TPP?
So I'm going to start. I get to party politics, but I'm going to start on the impacts of free trade deals like NAFTA and CAFTA. Those impacts are being felt every day, and they're getting stronger every day, whether it be job loss, wage diminishing, general economic depression, or migration crises and other non-financial or trade-related issues that have arose after NAFTA and CAFTA. This has led to the American worker, regardless of their party affiliation or lack thereof, to see our trade policy as bad, and it has allowed populists on both sides of the aisle to bring this up as an issue because people are feeling the pain. We've lost over 60,000 jobs in manufacturing jobs in Oregon since NAFTA was passed. And those aren't just the numbers certified by the Department of Labor as trade-related job loss. But when a factory shuts down directly because of trade, the tax revenue for that community also dries up, and you start to see a ripple effect of job loss into the public sector from tax revenue, into the service sector from the lack of capital and wages happening in the community. So we're seeing that Americans are waking up and saying, no, we have a bad trade policy. It doesn't serve us as workers. It doesn't serve our climate. It doesn't serve our rights to medication or our rights as human beings in general. And folks are fed up. And that energy has been grasped on by both Democrat and Republican presidential candidates. However, I have to point out that if anybody watched any of the DNC, the issue that came up the most in chants and signs was the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And there is exactly one Democrat with a national profile left supporting the Trans-Pacific Partnership. One. And his name is Barack Obama. Secretary Clinton, against. Vice presidential nominee Kaine, against. Minority leader Pelosi, against. Minority leader Reid, against. Senator Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, those folks don't have national positions, but they have a national profile, and they are all vehemently opposed to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, along with our folks, Senator Jeff Merkley and Representative Peter DeFazio.
Okay, to shift the frame a little bit, Shannon, you are with the Fair Trade Campaign. What would positive, constructive policies around international trade look like? What would our best practices be if we had them?
I'm actually going to take a step back from that question because I think that it's most important that the people impacted, and I am one of those people as a medication consumer and as an American, but the people that are most disparately impacted should have their voices at the table. So let's look at the negotiation process. Who was at the table and who was on the menu? Corporations and the government were at the table. Workers, our environment, and regulations designed to protect us were on the menu. If I don't know what a fair trade policy should look like because I don't know what a Vietnamese worker wants to see, I don't know what a Japanese farmer wants to see, and I don't know what a single African-American mom in East Portland wants to see. But they need to be at the table. Frontline workers, environmental activists, human rights advocates, and public health experts need to be at the table. I don't want to say what a fair trade policy would look like coming out from that because I want those voices along with business. I understand that business is part of trade, but we can't have all business, all corporations at the table. They need to be part of the people, the constituents that are invited to negotiate trade deals.
Shannon, as you travel around and as you organize people and talk with people at the grassroots and people who are policymakers, is there any aspect of the TPP in which there's a really deep-rooted misunderstanding that you think people might hold? What do you think is the most important thing that consumers know about the TPP and understand really clearly?
That is a great question, and I'm going to take it to the highest possible level. The phrase free trade. It has been used to sell the idea that it maximizes the movement of goods and services, and that is a beneficial thing for our country and our economy globally and locally. The fact is, free trade is not free. Because if you look at free trade as the removal of trade barriers and protectionism like tariffs, you know, economies change, tariffs have a place, tariffs don't have a place, that's a debatable point. But you've already removed the majority of tariffs through General Agreement on Tariffs and GATT, WTO, other free trade agreements. There aren't that many tariff-based trade barriers anymore. What there are regulation-based trade barriers, which are regulations designed by governments to protect or benefit their citizens. These are now the barriers that corporations want to get rid of so that they can maximize their profit. That's not free, and it's only a new form of protectionism when you reduce a tariff on a medication and then you increase the patent protection so a cheaper version can't be made. It's still an expensive pill, but where's that extra expense going? It's no longer going to a government for the public good. It's now going to a company for private profit. It's still protectionism. It's protectionism for corporations, not for individual countries, not for burgeoning industries like tariffs were originally designed to be. It is a new form of protectionism that is anything but free. But that moniker free trade sounds so good. That's actually the thing in the TPP I want people to say the most of is the very front part of the description of the agreement. It is not free trade. It is corporate trade.
I'm remembering a phrase that we used to use that was called corporate welfare. Mm-hmm. I don't hear that phrase very often.
All right. I'm going to quickly answer a question which you didn't ask, but I thought you were asking. So I got all ready for it, which is what are our local lawmakers saying and doing? And that's one thing that makes it in Oregon, in the Portland metro area, very easy, actually, to have some of these conversations is we are furious that our representatives from one of the most progressive states in the nation, one of the most progressive cities in the nation, are three of the representatives that are most likely going to be voting for this bill. They all voted for the fast track bill last year, which is basically what gave the president the authority to finish the deal. There's a lot more in it, but that's a simplistic description. And so our Portlanders and Oregonians are really upset at Earl Blumenauer, Suzanne Bonamici, and Kurt Schrader. They're not representing their districts. They're not representing the workers of Oregon. And to be honest with you, we're all very sick of hearing we're a trade-dependent state as an excuse to vote for bad trade policy. We are a trade-dependent state. We are a trade-dependent nation. And we can grow with fair and positive trade policy instead of shrink under pro-corporate trade policy.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.